Hey, welcome back to the show. My guest today is Ben O'Keefe. Ben is an international rugby referee, and having watched the Whistleblowers documentary, I wanted to get him on the show to dive into so much more around officiating in sport. So if you haven't seen that documentary, I really recommend you go and watch it. Expect to learn what some of the most misunderstood qualities of referees are, how to deal with criticism, how not to let your mistakes stop you from making decisions, how to trust your intuition, why respecting referees is so important, how football's new blue card is a good thing, and much more.
Do you mind doing me the biggest favour, and that is hitting the follow or subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening to this show on? It is the cheapest and easiest way in which you can support the show. By doing that, it raises the profile, it allows us to get more guests on, and helps create better, interesting conversations for you guys to listen to. So your support is super valuable, and I thank you so much for doing that.
This episode is brought to you by Mindstrong Sport, the app for athletes that is designed to be your mental gym in making your mind your greatest strength. Using meditation, performance psychology, mental skills training, mindset courses, and many more exercises, the Mindstrong Sport app is the perfect place for any athlete to start or maintain their mental performance and well-being. So whether you're an athlete, coach, or practitioner working within sport, the Mindstrong Sport app is the place to start. And as a listener of the show, you get 20% off subscriptions using the link Raising Your Game via the special link in the description of this episode. That's Raising Your Game via the link in the description of this episode. Head over there right now to grab this offer. But now I give you Ben O'Keefe. Enjoy. What do you think some of the most misunderstood qualities are of referees?
I think one of the biggest ones around refereeing is that everyone thinks that referees are just out to spoil the fun and, we hate the game. I think the reason, referees are part of the game. Now, not all of us could have been, professional players. So, often that's why we pick up the whistle or we get injured. But, we come from a background of absolutely loving sport, but also absolutely loving rugby. We're just trying to go out there to facilitate the game that we love as well. And sometimes, we have to make the hard decisions. We've got to penalise players. We've got to show yellow cards. We've got to show red cards. But we're only trying to do that to facilitate the game in the best way that we try to do. So I think, that's kind of misunderstood around referees, especially, when we're trying to go out there and just enjoy ourselves as well.
Where does the enjoyment come for you?
The enjoyment for me is probably it changes over the years that I've been involved. Like initially it was growing up in New Zealand, love rugby, love watching the All Blacks, want to be involved, love playing, grew up playing. And then as I went through the levels, it became about, having that break away from the stuff I was doing during the week when, it wasn't my full-time job. That energizer kick you get out of, being in the field, like running around, being part of something. Catching up with people after the game, talking about code. Like I love that sort of social side. Then it sort of moved through and I started doing a bit of travel and some big games, and it was the travel. It was actually the being able to go around the world, meeting people, big stadiums, kind of cities, spending weeks in places like Rome and London and Ireland and France, all these amazing experiences. And then now what it's like, and all those things are still part of it for me, but now I love the challenge. I think that every game I go out, I'm always trying to be better, kind of like what I said about at the start, for the game, for the players. I think I can do a really good job. And the game's always different. It's always challenging, no matter how experienced you are. And I think I like that. You go out there, you're nervous because you don't want to make a mistake. You're going to make a mistake. So you try and mitigate how bad that is, and you go out and do the best that you can. And I think that challenge that I get out of day-to-day walking on the field, getting off the field, and reviewing my game, seeing what I did well, seeing what I need to improve on is quite cool.
I watched the Whistleblowers documentary. Have you watched it back yourself?
Yeah. I love asking people what they thought about it. And because I feel like I'm a little bit biased. Referee, I loved it. For me, it's almost like a look back of experience we went through, and absolutely loved it in terms of what it showed, like some of the emotional highs, some of the emotional lows, with myself, with other referees, you know, it'll be something that I'll show my kids. It'll be something that I'll look back on in 10, 20 years and be really proud of. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it because I also think it, what it did was that it was able to showcase a little bit of the behind the scenes around, you know, you don't see just the 80 minutes of what we go out to on the field. You see how much it means to us, the emotional toll that it takes after a game on us, you know, the highs and the lows of the roller coaster of going through a World Cup and appointments and, you know, games going well, your family sort of, you know, being there, not being there, all these things outside of a game of rugby, which, you know, you don't really get to see. So I quite liked how we were, you know, very open about that, and I think it showcased it well. But yeah, I always love asking people what they thought about it because I'm pretty biased around it.
Mate, I loved it. I genuinely loved it. I thought it was really, really well done. I thought it was exactly, I think, what sport needed, which was something like that done in sport. And I think to do it in rugby first, I think it's probably the first referee documentary of its style that I've seen around. I can't think of any others that I've seen.
Yeah, it had been one or two, but like quite a wee while ago. So, you know, all the trend is now that teams are, you know, opening the doors, allowing cameras in. So it's certainly the first that's been done in a while. And I hope it's not the last because, you know, whilst I think in an hour it showed a really good insight into how we operate as referees, there's so many more angles that I think, you know, we can go into in the future to allow people to understand the game a bit more, but also the group of referees a bit more as well.
Was there anything that surprised you from other colleagues that were in the show and potentially what came out of that from their side and you thought, oh, wow, didn't realise they were going through that or that's what they did and how they prepped and how they reviewed games? Or, yeah, was there anything you took out of it from the other guys?
I think a lot of what we do preparation-wise, in-game, review-wise, is all pretty similar. Like we work well together. We do a lot together as a team. So it's more just the family things that were happening outside of, you know, what was going on. Everyone has something going on in their life. We all do. And, you know, everyone has the right to share as much as they want to and also hold back as much as they want to as well. So I found a few of those things. There were a few surprises there that even I didn't know about. And you realize that, you know, you're going through a lot. Everyone else is going through a lot as well. I think the behind the scenes around what happened with Jarko Piper, like I remember watching his game and when he got injured in that quarterfinal, I was watching it live. I was absolutely gutted for it because I knew what it meant. But to see actually the behind the scenes of what happened in Marseille, which I couldn't see because we were in Paris, to see that actually how that unfolded as well, you know, made me, you know, quite emotional again too, because, you know, these are your teammates, these are your brothers and your sisters that you're refereeing with. So, you know, it was all of that. And I think, you know, even just like behind the scenes that we don't even see as referees of the selection process, I found that really interesting too. So I loved it for all those types of reasons. I think it showcased us in a really positive light because, you know, it made us a bit more, I guess, understandable. And I hope that we can, you know, do that a bit more in the future as well.
Yeah, when he got injured, I think it was his calf, wasn't it, that he did in the game. It's so easy for people to see that and see it comically. I think if you were to flip that and it was a player, people would be gutted because obviously everyone's rooting for whichever team they're going for at the time. I saw it and thought, because it was quite early on in the game, wasn't it? I think it was fairly early on.
It was in the first quarter of the game. And like, that's the thing, you know, we see, you ever see referees almost as athletes. Now, we're not Olympic athletes, but we're, you know, we train hard so that we can perform well, so that we can make decisions within a game, be in the right position to make a call in the 80th minute of the game. And to do that, you know, mentally and physically, we've got to, you know, be in the right mindset and prepare well for those games. So when we do get injured, you know, it means that we have to leave the field. We can't referee the next weekend. So, you know, we're really gutted by that. And, you know, certainly as a team, we get really disappointed for individuals because, you know, someone like Jarko Piper, was one of the best referees in the world at that stage and could be refereeing, you know, semi-finals, finals, and after many more years. But, you know, the injury sort of stopped him from doing that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and then like you said, the insight that you get of just how gutted he was when you come off looks visually emotional and it really being a huge impact. Like that for me was massively eye-opening. It almost will change my perspective forever when that happens. And I think that's what the whole documentary did. It really changed perspective, and I just again think it's really valuable for people to be able to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it, and you know, he was still with us in camp for the following 2-3 weeks, and I think some people can probably get down, and you know, I'm sure he was down about it, but He was part of the team. He was, giving me advice, giving Angus advice, helping us out through our semi-finals. He got in right behind Barnsley to help him out as well. So, he was an awesome team man, especially with, something significant like that which happened to him.
It was so interesting how an insight into your physical training was massive as well. And like you guys in the gym, literally like a full squad, like in the gym working out. How much of the physical training for you plays a role in your ability to mentally be sharp, especially like you said, towards those end minutes in the game where you could be having to make a call that could mean a team is inches, millimeters away from winning or losing a game?
Well, I guarantee you, just because the video is in there, I'm pretty sure that there are a few extra plates put on those bars just to try and... I've never seen those guys lift as heavy as that, but all of a sudden we get the same T-shirts on, we're a team, we're in the gym. It was pretty cool. One thing about referees is that we often are by ourselves, we're independent. So we might train in ones or twos, or we work in groups of four. So during big tournaments like that, to have all 30 of us like a team together was a lot of fun. But for us physically, a big side of the game is mental prep, obviously getting ourselves in the right mental framework to be confident to get up into the field, but also that confidence comes through, okay, how are you physically prepared during the week? We need to physically prepare well so that A, we remain injury free. Second thing, so that we can obviously keep up with the play and also be able to be in a position where our heart rate's low enough, we're not mentally fatigued, so that we can make those big decisions from the first whistle, but also after running, 6.5 kilometers in the 80th minute, that's when you need to be sharp. You need to be in the right position as well. So a lot of our training during the week, while it's not, lifting those heavy weights, while it's not running those marathons during the week, it's based on, the agility, the acceleration, the decelerations that we need to do in a game. So we've got all this data from our GPS technology that tells us what we need to be able to do in a game. So we got to make sure we cover that off during the week, in the gym, on the field. And then once we've done that, it means that, okay, cool, Friday night before I go to bed for a Saturday game, I know that physically I'm prepared. I can go out and do the best job that I can, knowing that, I've done all I can during the week. So a lot of it is science-based now. Like we have trainers at World Rugby, we have trainers here in New Zealand that look after that program for us. So, we're quite lucky to be able to have that that resource for us too.
I was talking about this the other day, that in sport, and especially in my sport, cricket, but in sport in general, that valuable athletes are the ones that can put in the performance in the dying minutes of a game, right at the end of the day, when it really matters most, because everyone can do it when they're fresh. That's easy because everyone's got the physical conditioning, they're mentally sharp, but it's the ones that can do it at in the last few minutes, the dying minutes, the extra time moments at 5 o'clock in the evening when it really matters, those are the guys that really, when they stand up, it's not just about physical strength, which it is a large part, but it's the mental strength, the mental acuity to be able to do that and be sharp in those moments and still perform. And I think you have this in sport where you value those players, they're really valuable. Is it the same in refereeing, where the guys that in those last moments, they're sharp, they're not sluggish, they're not the ones that are chasing the game and physically off it?
Yeah, and that's the thing, potentially the most fittest guys at World Rugby weren't the ones doing the last semi-finals, finals of the last 3 or 4 World Cups, but what they were good at, you were thinking of the Wayne Barnes, the Nigel Owens, the Jerome Garcias. Okay, they might not be in have been the fittest guys in the squad. They might not have been out of the bench the most in the squad, but what they were very good at is making those technically accurate decisions in the last 5 minutes of a World Cup semi-final or World Cup final. Also not making the decisions that we're going to determine a game. They're really good at understanding what the game needed. And so that is, I think, down to good preparation, obviously, during the week, but really down to a lot of good experience as well. So once you marry that up and you reach that peak between experience, getting your body right, understanding the game, respect from players, that's where you get those guys that are referring the top end. And it's a thing, it's not like players where you see that actively on the field. A player scores a try in the 80th minute. It's the subtle things that you don't notice that a really good referee can sort of manage those games where, okay, they may stay out of it, they may not need to blow their whistle, but it's also the referee that isn't scared to they blow their whistle in the 81st minute know that's going to determine get the game, but that was the right outcome in that moment. So now that's the stuff that you continually try and work at as a referee to be really good at in those moments. And over time, you get more and more examples of that. And over time, you review yourself in those moments to go, okay, would I do the same the next time? If the answer is yes, great. If it's not, then, okay, what do I need to do? You learn, you talk to people so that when it comes up again, you can make the right decision.
I loved the clip of Angus Gardner doing a shadow game. I thought that was one of the greatest insights that I'd seen in sort of not only just refereeing, but kind of in sport. And very interesting how he did it. But the reason why I loved it was because that was his way of doing it. And you can look at some people will look at it and go, this guy, what is he doing? This looks a bit mad. He's running around with fake sort of game going on. But then they actually, the way they clipped it, made it look really relatable and really relevant. While you may not do a shadow game, is there something that you hold on to that works really well for you to prep you for a game?
Yeah, they did a really good job of showcasing that. And you know, Angus Gardner, like all of us, I think at that level, is extremely diligent around what he does. And I think whilst we have a very good system around what we all do the same, you know, there's a lot that we did the same in terms of our preparation, as a certain sort of standard, I guess. We all have our own individuality around extra things that we've done or that we do that really help us or something that we're working on. I think while Angus Gardner does that on a Wednesday, I think what I do, I work sort of more on the positioning on a Wednesday for me. So you know, I'll be making sure that I'm running to certain cones, moving into the defensive line, moving out. And I try and train that so it's subconscious so that when I'm in the game, I'm not having to think about my position. I can think about what's happening in front of me. And I think what you saw Angus doing, and I think what you see a lot of referees do before a game as well, is visualization. What he was doing, he was visualizing setting up a scrum. He was visualizing having to talk to a captain. And apart from us being able to watch clips during the week, the only chance, unless we're in with a team, that we get to perform or practice our performance is actually on Saturday in the game. So we relied heavily on looking at video clips, but also visualization. And for me, that's been a big part of how I prepare during the week. And you know, I'll stand in front of a mirror, and it might sound a bit silly, but I'll be in front of the mirror as if I'm talking to the captain, as if I'm talking to a player that's challenging me. Before a game, you'll see me, I have about 15 minutes where I just go through my movements at the tackle, at the ruck, at the scrum, at the line out. And again, like we talked about before, once I've done that, I can tick it off. I now know that, cool, I've done everything I need to do. It'll be the same thing for Angus. So once he's done that on the Wednesday, he knows, great, cool, I've done my job for Wednesday, move on to Thursday. He'll be ready for Saturday. But yeah, I love seeing that because we all have some sort of, way or style that we use. And I've seen Angus do that. And that's why he does a really, really amazing job on the field.
Yeah, there was a moment where, I can't remember what game it was, but the cameras were following you and huge stadium and full to the brim. The noise is electric. And you're going out, it's before kickoff, it's both teams warming up, but you're going out doing your warm-up as well with your colleagues. And you say that you were kind of soaking up the pressure, soaking up the moment. And then there was a moment where you said, I trust myself. I have to trust myself. So is that, what is going on for you in those sort of final minutes as you lead into the game? What is it that you're doing there that gets you to really lock into your job? Because that would be so easy to just see the occasion, see the two teams, get caught up in a multitude of distractions. What is it that you're doing in those last minutes to bring that visualization and then really dial in for that game?
Yeah, I mean, so that was, I think that was between obviously the quarter and the semi-final. So yeah, out referee the semi-final, walked out onto that field, and you know, the atmosphere was electric. It's a World Cup semi-final. You know, there's 80,000 people there. You're walking out, you're on the big screen, there's the reaction that you get, from the crowd as well. And I think it's important, some people might say it's really good, you've got to switch off, you've got to ignore that, but I think you do have to soak it in. You've got to actually understand what the moment is, what the occasion is. Yes, every game is the same, but also every game is different, and you have to be aware of that so you can adapt. Now, the one way that I know that I can deal with that, so for example, I know that I love the anthems, when I get the anthems of the teams. I know that to help prepare for certain anthems, like French national anthem, the Scottish national anthem, the South African, I'll listen to it on YouTube during the week so that I'm desensitized to the emotion around it, because it's just so cool. I love rugby. I love those moments before a big Six Nations game. But I try and soak all that in so that when I do blow my whistle, I'm just in the game. And often, like, I won't notice the crowd after that for 80 minutes because they're just locked in into your craft, into what you've trained for. And, you know, it's not until you're having a kick at a conversion or sometime that you might switch off if there's an injury, that's when you can look around again, but then you get locked back in too. So, for example, when I was walking out to do that, I was soaking in the atmosphere. But I also knew that because I had a routine around how I warm up, I was able to just fall back into that rhythm, fall back into that routine. And I think it really helped me in that moment, because sometimes it can be quite overwhelming, all the crowds, all the emotion. So if you have a routine, you lock back into your routine, and then you know that you get your warm-up done without all the extra things going on in your head. So for me, it's really important that that routine, not just before the game, but it happens during the week, so you can get through the week no matter what distractions you have, no matter what distractions you have before the game, no matter what difficult question a coach has asked you in the changing shed, you can get back to your routine, get back to the game, and then know that you can do the 80 minutes really well.
Yeah, and then trusting your intuition. So when you're on the field, there must be some balance between the officiating and sort of going by the rules and then also being in the moment. Because let's face it, there is such a different feel to being on the pitch to what it is those watching TV. Now, I find it really interesting now when I go and watch, say, a professional cricket match, and everyone's watching from the sides and they're commentating in their own way. They're talking about the game in their own way. And they say things and you're like, you honestly, what you're saying and what's going on out there will be vastly different, like wildly different. Like the energy, there's something that happens when you're on the field. You're in the cadence of the game. You know, almost, it's almost weird. You know where everyone is. You can't kind of put your finger on it. You just kind of know where they're sitting and standing and like what's going on. And then the decisions that get made, you feel that, you understand sort of where that comes from because of the tempo, whatever. I don't know what it is, but how much of what you're doing, do you have to kind of trust your gut, trust your intuition, as well as balancing that sort of real officiating and doing it like perfectly? Because I know you've got TMO that you can always go to, but yeah, how much of it is trusting your intuition?
Well, I think everything is about trusting your intuition. But the intuition that you're trusting is something that's been well informed over years and years of experience of really good decisions, poor decisions, reviews, you know, so, you know, seeing clips. So you actually built this foundation of understanding of the game so that your intuition is actually very, very close to how you feel the game should be refereed, or very, very close to the law. I know that it's, you know, incredibly important that in a game, you're actually trying to, you get into a sense of flow. You know, it'd be like the same as the players as well. So you're flowing through this game. You're really connected to the game. I sort of know what has happened in the ruck over here, but also know what's happening behind me. You sort of can feel what the players are doing. You can feel things bubbling away, so you know when you need to get on top of things before they happen. So that's something that you can feel when you're really connected. And I know that even as an assistant referee, so, you know, just on the sidelines, don't have that full connection. So then you go further back into the crowd, you go further back into commentating, and then you get influenced, obviously, by slow motion and replay. That connection of what's actually happening on the field can be quite different. But I've always worked in my head, and it's one thing that I actually have engraved in my whistle. So some people have certain types of resets that they use in the game. So you see a lot of players, they do that box breathing to be able to calm their heart rate. That's their reset. A lot of people use like physical cues, like clicking their fingers, hitting their thigh. That's a reset. Some people use visual cues. I sort of have like a mental or like a visual cue, although also it's called trust and enjoy. And the reason I use that is because at any time in the game where I feel like I have doubt about that intuition or a decision that I've made, so I've seen a decision, I'm not sure about it. If I keep thinking about that decision that's happened and I made my decision about it, what it's going to do is going to snowball into the next decision. And it might mean that I'm slightly off for that decision. I might be slightly out of position. It means that I might make an error there. And then it will snowball into the next one, the next one, the next one. So I've got to be able to work out a way to be able to go, cool, I've made that decision, move on to the next one, next job, next scrum, next lineup. And it's something that I've been able to develop over a few years. And what I've realized is that in all those moments that I've ever had doubt around a decision, whether I'm right or wrong, when I've actually gone and reviewed it after the game, I'll almost say 99% of the time, I've always been right. So I've learned just being in those moments when you have doubt, know that when you've always reviewed these situations, 99% of the time you're actually right. So trust your instinct, move on to the next job, and then just enjoy, obviously, the game you're doing. So that's how I get through my games. I had a great example last week. I was refereeing in Tonga. It was Highlanders versus Moana Pacifica. And I was up with play, but there was a bobble of the ball when I wasn't sure if the player would beat down to pick it up. It touched the hands, or the ball went through the hands and it touched the foot, and then it was play on. They ended up scoring a try. So I had doubt in my mind. Even when I was looking at the replay on the big screen, I had doubt in my mind. But I had to spend the next 10, 30 seconds to say, Ben, you've been in this position before. Trust yourself. Get on to the next job. You've got 45 minutes of the game to go. And then obviously I did the review, and then on the review, he didn't knock it on. So again, it was another great example of going, Ben, if you trust yourself, you'll make the right decision. You'll be able to make the right decisions for the rest of the game as well, and don't let it affect it. So for me, it's really, really important that intuition that you built up over experience through games, over really diligent review, over asking really good questions to coaches and players, having the hard reviews from your coaches as well. All of those building blocks go to the intuition you can build to actually referee a really good game of rugby.
Yeah, that review process that you're talking about, I think that really blew me away in the documentary about how much going into the post-match, you look at it, even as you mentioned around selections, like how it was almost like it almost gave me flashbacks of just being selected in a team. You get called into your hotel room, like, yeah, look, you're kind of just not there. You are there, you're in, you're out, sort of thing. But that review process, what you're talking about is many people will feel self-doubt, right? And it's just where you're riddled with the what ifs, the negative cognitive distortions that you're lining up in your mind, take your pick. But you're really talking about the one thing that gives you the flip, which is that self-belief and leaning on your past experiences, knowing you've been here before and doing that. And that, I think, is such a powerful message for people to have, because I think one of the most common things I get from people that I interact with is, how do I overcome my self-doubt? How do I stop doubting myself? And the flip is, how do I believe in myself, right? It's how do I build that self-belief? And you're talking about one of the most powerful ways, which is take your past experiences, remember them. So I'm a huge fan of people coming off reviewing and going, if I did something right, like log that in your brain, hardwire it into your brain and go, that was a good experience and these are the reasons why it was.
Totally. And I think, look, like on that, self-belief is so important. You can manufacture it a little bit, but also, you know, you can build on it throughout the week. So for me, like we talked about at the start, I know that if I prepared by doing my physical training, by doing my preview of the game, by talking with my team of four before the game, what it does, it gives me the self-belief, which gives me confidence to go out and referee the game. And then I know that I've done all that I can, so therefore I've just got to go out and referee it. I think it's also okay to have some self-doubt. Like, I think that's normal to have. I think it's okay to have known that you've made wrong decisions in a review. You can never be perfect. It's just what you do with that self-doubt, and it's what you do with that error that you've made. If you just leave it and don't do anything about it, then I think, you know, what will happen is it will come up again. But use it as a bit of gold. It's a diamond in the rough. You know, grab it, polish it, work out, okay, why did you have that? Why did you make that error in the game? And so for me, if I make an error in a game, I realize, okay, that's a part of my toolbox that I need to fill for the tool. So I need to work out, okay, how do I be better so I don't make that same mistake next time? And, you know, even going as far as, you know, some really, really good games that I've refereed, I've got on a hard drive on my computer. So that if I ever have that self-doubt, or I'm finding a week really hard, you know, I might just spend one afternoon watching about 10 minutes of that game. And what it does is it builds up that self-belief again, saying, like, well, that's actually me on the field refereeing a test match, and I'm doing a really good job. So this test match this weekend, or this Super Rugby game this weekend, yeah, I'm going to do really well. So let's get back into self-belief. And, you know, it's okay to sort of have those ups and downs. And I think it's just about, okay, trying to work out how do you get yourself to the point where you can get back on track. And, you know, whether it's just watching a clip of, you know, a game that you played, or a moment that you refereed really well, or, you know, talking to some friends and family about something, or, you know, whatever it is, going and play golf, you know, doing something you enjoy to get you back on track, and, you know, you build that self-belief up again, because I think that's a big part of everything.
How do you, if in a game you've made a mistake, and it's come up and you've had to overturn a decision. How do you not allow that mistake to then move into the rest of the game in the moment? So how are you getting over mistakes that you made so that you don't allow it to affect what you're doing for the rest of the match?
Well, I just go like, geez, okay, cool, I made one mistake, I'm not making another one, you know? So it's just, you know, put a hard stop there. But kind of what I said before is that I'm not sure if this is a mistake yet, because I actually don't have the benefit of sitting down, looking at all the angles, looking at the replays. So whether the captain thinks it's a mistake, whether we've overturned a decision with the TMO, which is fine, it's part of the game, you're allowed to do that. I just got to move on to the next job anyway. And I think you just got to be able to make a mental decision to go, cool, that was my best decision I can make in that moment. I've got to move on to try and make the best decision I can in the next moment either. So I don't really go through the game thinking, you know, correct, incorrect, because I think, you know, you're potentially setting yourself up to fail there, because you might not have made an incorrect decision even though you think it is, you know, but you need to have the benefit of, you know, a really good sit down, go through the clips there to see if you're right or wrong. You just need to be, you know, on that roller coaster in the moment and just trust, like I've said before, just trust that, you know, you can just go through and make good decisions in the game. I think it's just like players. Players aren't perfect in the game. You know, they'll throw a full pass. They'll make a knock on as well. They've also got to be able to get back on the wing and catch the next ball to score a try. So we also get opportunities in games to do really good jobs as well. So I think in an 80-minute game of rugby, you know, we have to make more than 200-plus decisions in a game. Yes, one or two of them might be errors, or one or two of them might be wrong, but, you know, overall, you're making some really, really good decisions in the game. That's what you've got to keep thinking about. So I always see every next decision as an opportunity to make a really good one.
And the thing with what you're doing is, and as you mentioned, the difference between a player and a referee is when you make those small mistakes or something gets overturned, the criticism that you guys face, I think, is times 10. The microscope is massively on you. So how do we become better at taking criticism?
That's a really difficult one, because I think that the biggest probably negative that we have, not on the game, because it's not just rugby, but I think in sport in general at the moment, with the advent of you know, all the camera angles that we get, social media that we get, you know, opinions are out there, and, you know, we're all humans, referees, we don't necessarily need to be liked, we want to be respected, but it's hard when you see your name all across media, your picture all across media, and it is different because, you know, potentially if a team loses, it's the team that loses, and also they have teammates to get around with certain players, potentially they're not named, but as a referee, you know, we do cop a lot of that criticism. And the game of rugby is, one thing I love about it so much is that, you know, it's such a beautiful game because it's contestable, which means that a lot of decisions are actually down to interpretation. So very rarely are there black and white decisions around, you know, what happens in game rugby. Like, yes, okay, if you knock the ball on, it goes forward towards the goal line, that is a knock on. But what is a player that doesn't roll out of the tackle? What is not affecting the nine? What is your philosophy around a player that goes off their feet? We could go out there, if we referee black and white to the law book, I wouldn't have a pee to my whistle. You know, like it would literally be, I could blow my whistle every single moment. So that's the beauty of our game, is that we have interpretation. We're trying to create flow. We're trying to create a really good spectacle so that we can showcase the skills of the players, but also so the spectators can really enjoy the game. And with that, you know, you can pick up on slow motion, you can pick up on screenshots, you know, potential other decisions that you would make as a referee, or, you know, what an opposition spectator would want to see differently. So it makes it difficult. But I think what we can do in the game is just understand that the game of rugby isn't perfect, but that's why we love it. You know, it's one of the best testable sports in the world. At any breakdown, a team can win the ball. And I think that jeopardy that we have in rugby, it's something that they don't have in league. It's something they don't have in AFL. They don't have in a lot of other team sports globally. So I think, you know, if we keep still loving that and understand that, you know, it's not the referees making errors, it's just the game is contestable, and, you know, we've got to enjoy that and, you know, move on from probably, you know, trying to pull out and name and shame referees if, you know, they're in the middle doing their job.
I think that's the one thing people forget about. The amazing thing about sport is that it can be subjective sometimes. It can be really, really subjective. I probably think there are some things in say, my sport of cricket, where there are almost objective decisions that can be wrong. So Hawkeye, the technology can be pretty good. They leave an element of error, sort of bandwidth in there. Tennis, that Hawkeye is pretty good for people to rely on. VAR is obviously a huge contestable one in football right now. And I think because there's so much scrutiny on football, or there's so many eyes on football globally, that the opinions are just exponential, and this objective need for it kind of ruins the flow of the game sometimes. This pure by the millimeter, it's absolutely perfect. I think there are so many pundits that are saying just let the game flow, and that then requires there to be more subjectivity from the referee side, and that then, whether rightly or wrongly, will create more debate around it. But then that's what I mean, it's the debate in sport that creates the beauty of it. It's the two people at a bar just going, did you think it was right? Do you think it's like two people competing over political ideologies, right? It's just, It's a similar thing.
And don't get me wrong, like, I love that. Like, I love going down to the pub and like people will be discussing, oh, did you see the decision in the game last night? You know, keep refereed. What do you think? You know, I love that. Like, that's something that, you know, I'd love to then, you know, it's why I try and educate and, you know, try and put our opinions out there and the laws and understanding and, you know, finding that balance between the subjectivity that I think the game should always have, but the objectivity around, you know, whether a foot is out or not, I think, you know, using the technology for that, I think that's really good, because whilst I think people, yes, really want flow, they want the right team to win the game as well. And so I think, you know, sometimes we may miss that foot and touch, sometimes we may miss that forward pass, but if the technology is available that we can quickly get that decision, and I think we can now, you know, we can get those decisions within a fraction of a second. I think if the technology give that to us, then great, let's use it alongside everything else so that, you know, the referee is less and less involved in the game and more of the game can be, you know, what we all love.
Yeah, I see, again, from the documentary, and I think it could be very easy for a perfectionistic referee to have a very hard time, because my area of research and study currently is in perfectionism, and it's a fascinating area, but one of the biggest symptoms of it is concerns over mistakes, doubting your actions, and essentially procrastination through the fear of failure. And if you have a perfectionistic referee and a perfectionistic athlete, anyone, you just will find it much harder to take that step, make that definitive decision, and actually come to a conclusion. And so again, that, if you think about it from a sporting context, that is not flowing, that is not entertaining to watch, because it's stop start, and so yeah, you could almost argue you don't want your referee to be perfect the same way you don't want your surgeon to be perfect, because if a surgeon was a perfectionist, I heard this phrase, if you want your surgeon to be a perfectionist, that's the wrong thing, because they'll never make an incision because they're just so scared of making the wrong move.
Well, so then that's the discussion, right? And I was funny, I was going to bring it up because my background is medicine, right? So you don't want to make mistakes, like your consequences are quite bad. So we had to redefine, like for rugby, what is perfect? So now that's something that we're trying to explore right now. What is the perfect game of rugby in terms of decision accuracy, the amount of non-decisions that you have in the game, and then how many inputs you have in that match? So I think we believe perfection is getting every single decision right. Well, that's not, because then a perfect game would look like 50 penalties and zero non-decisions, so decisions that you should have made, where I think, you know, potentially the perfect game of rugby is, you know, your decision accuracy, no matter how many decisions you made, so 8 penalties a game or 22 penalties a game, your decision accuracy is 100%, but maybe, you know, you've got that sort of between 8 to 12 non-decisions in the game that, you know, that didn't lead to any major points. So it's actually trying to work out what is that picture in front of you where, you know, you have that perfect game, because you're right, if you're trying to be perfect, and we do, like we want to referee the perfect game, we want to make sure we're making the right decision, then, and it is tough when you do make errors or you referee the game poorly, that next week is hell. And it's not because of the media, it's not because of everyone's opinion. You know, people probably think that we walk off the field and we go, cool, okay, we've got a game next week. Like, we really beat ourselves up during that week, and that's where we do a lot of training around, okay, how do we get ourselves out of that hole? Understanding that, you know, we've got to find that confidence again to get out in the middle to do a really good job the weekend after. So that's something that we're always exploring, and, you know, it's still difficult at the highest level to do, because, you know, there are more people watching, there's more opinions out there.
Yeah, people there's more people I'm seeing searching for that perfect performance, and something that I'm really interested in providing to them or getting them to try out is what I've see us or named as a minimal viable performance. Is what is my level of performance that I'm going to be really happy with if I take away outcome, right? If I take away outcome, what would I be able to go home with and put my head on my pillow and be happy with that performance, minimal viable performance? So it could be a percentage of correct calls. It could be the amount of times I'm trying to get into space, whatever it might be. It's things that you can genuinely control, and that can kind of rid you of this idea of what a perfect performance is. I've actually got a podcast coming up with an academic called Patrick Goodrow. Did a lot of stuff in perfectionism, but he also brought out this new sort of model around something called excellencism, which is, can you strive for excellence rather than just perfection? And in my opinion, and I've spoken to academics, Gordon Flett, who's a sort of godfather of perfectionism, who he asks, can you be either adaptable or perfect? Right. And if you think about it, you would far rather be adaptable, because a perfectionist or being perfect is only really working in a certain environment. Okay, so if you're
in that moment as well. So you may be perfect for that moment, but if you don't adapt, the game changes, you change. You know, you're not going to be perfect in the future. So I love that. That sounds really, really interesting. That's also what we have been moving to, that where, you know, okay, you can't be perfect, but what does a high performance look like for a referee? It's not that perfection. It's potentially, you know, that space below. And I think that's one thing. But then again, like, you could have that really good performance that you're really happy with, but you still beat yourself up about that one decision that you wish you changed. And that's something that we always work on. I think, you know, players do the same as well. So it is that fight. It just shows, though, that our attitude towards the game is we just really want to do a good job through running. I think all referees are like that.
Yeah, I think what I've taken from your dealing with mistakes, dealing with criticism, is that trusting in this process that happens after, this ability to review it, I think that is massive. Do you see the mistake, the criticism, all this negative talk as something that could completely define you, or something that you can use to allow it to define you moving forward as a better positive? Like, this is the character I've bounced back. I've used it as fuel to my fire.
I see it as an opportunity. You know, you've got to be able to pick up on things, and you either take it as criticism if it is, or you see it as an opportunity. I've got a few trusted people around me who I use in terms of my review, in terms of coaching, obviously friends and family as well. So if there is a lot of attention or talk about a game, like, I don't, even though it's uncomfortable, I don't hide away from it. I actually look at it. Okay, what are these people saying? Is it credible? Is it an opportunity for me to learn? And if it's the same message that my coach has given me, it's like, okay, cool, I understand. It is something I need to work on. But if we, you know, if I look at what the public is saying too much, and it's completely different to when I review the game, what my coach says, what, you know, my trusted people around me say, you know, I can go, cool, I've actually done a real critical review of my game. Yes, there were issues, or and these are the great things I did, so this is what I need to focus on. But I can push away, you know, the external noise, because actually, you know, we've done a thorough review, we've gone through the process, you know, it's not what we've seen in that moment as well. So having a structure around that is really important as well, because then if you just were reactive and you reacted to everything that everyone said, you would change every single time that you refereed, and you wouldn't improve. You'd keep sort of either plateauing or going up and down like this. So I think in terms of being able to grow as a player, but also as a referee, you know, you've got to have that structure behind you so you can just keep small improvements, you know, lead to a really good outcome the long term.
I think the one thing I'd be really interested to see with the documentary as well is the levels of respect that potentially even change and increase. Because look, you guys are respected. You can see it. Just the way interactions are done on the field. You've obviously got mics on you. You can pretty much hear the conversations that you're having with the players. They're very respectful. And there was an interesting stat that I found, or a bunch of stats that I found, which was from a survey done in 2023 in football. It said that they surveyed about 7,000. They sent a survey out to 7,000 grassroots footballers sort of across the country. And there were 927 respondents, and 908 of these were referees. These were all officials. Of the 927 referee respondents, 908 said they regularly received verbal abuse, over 100 referees of 122 that were in total of being aged 17 and under experienced verbal abuse. Out of those respondents, 293 faced physical abuse, so threats of physical abuse, both from players, coaches, fans. And then 283 received threats of violence. 57 respondents received death threats for themselves and their loved ones at recreational level. This was wild.
It's horrible to hear, but I know that it's happening out there. And I guess that's football, but I know that it's happening in rugby union as well. Obviously, you know, we experience it professional level, but I think that's different now. And it's not making an excuse at the professional level, but when I hear that, you know, that those stats included 18 years and below, you know, so kids, like, that really, that really makes me, you know, quite angry with I guess the environment that we're trying to help people in. Because, you know, I was an 18-year-old playing rugby and, you know, then starting to referee, and now I'm doing what I'm doing. But we're going to push people away from not just playing, but, you know, giving up their time to officiate the game because of the abuse that they receive at that age, and, you know, receive it at that age when they don't probably have the skills or the foundations around them to be able to cope with it, which someone like myself has because I'm a professional. So, and I know, you know, I get a lot of people contacting me, and, you know, that's why I try and, you know, I think whistleblowers is really good for that, or, you know, as referees, we're trying to be more open around what we are experiencing so that, you know, those people out there in, I guess, the amateur levels, they can actually understand that, okay, cool, it's happening to Ben O'Keefe, and, you know, he's actually giving me some advice on how to deal with it. But, you know, I would, you know, it is going to start affecting the greater game that we have, because we're all in it together. We're all stakeholders in the game, spectators, players, coaches, and referees. And I think you know, we've all got to learn that we all need each other. And if we stop, you know, people starting out younger, just as players do, to become referees, you know, it's really going to affect the game that players love to play when they're older, I think, across all sports. So it is something we need to fix.
I think you nailed it. I think the fact that in rugby, as a general, if you go to a local park rugby match, you see general respect as an overarching thing. You see this general respect for the referees. But I think that comes from the fact that visually what you see at an international professional level is that respect. You're these big guys, that's heated moments. But at the end of the day, like, referee says something, it's final. And I'm really interested that football is... So I don't know if you knew, but football is going to be introducing this blue card, which is essentially a sin bin. So it's a 10-minute sin bin for any discretion that may be happening. And I can only see this as a good thing, because what is happening at professional level in football, I don't know why, but we're just allowing people to be openly, with probably the most cameras on a sport you will ever see, to be openly disrespectful to each other and not think that that is going to influence the grassroots of the game, because the stats are showing, like, that's what's happening. There is this abuse that can spill over from the game, from the sport, into people's everyday lives. Whereas just by introducing this simple rule of, no, here's some discipline if you disrespect the person who is trying to officiate this match that you want to play and trying to enjoy. So yeah, I'm interested to know what your thoughts are on this introduction of the blue card in football.
I'm a massive supporter of that, and not just cross football, but, you know, showing respect to match officials in all sports, but also, you know, match officials showing respect to players and coaches. You know, it's vice versa. So this blue card in football, I think, is great. I think it's going to take a few years, you know, but we have to sort of be able to stay with it for a few years to be able to get the good long-term outcome. It's going to be really, you know, every time we try and bring a new law in rugby union, you know, it's uncomfortable for the first few weeks, then people get used to it and it actually changes behavior. But you're right, like, we do have that amazing gift in rugby union where, you know, the players do respect the match officials. And I think, you know, that respect is, you know, within everyone on the field. So we're quite fortunate here, and I think it does influence what happens in grassroots, what people see on TV. So I do hope that, you know, they continue with the blue card in football, and then we do get some change that then, you know, trickles down to the grassroots, because out of that you'll get some of the best football match officials coming out of it, because they'll understand that, okay, we're safe to do our craft, we can start at a young age, and let's enjoy this and, you know, make a career out of it.
Even from just people playing the sport, right? Just people playing the sport and enjoying it, and it being a much more enjoyable, fun thing. But that's what we want. We want people to, regardless of you going and becoming a professional, if you're just playing local park football, rugby, cricket, whatever, and someone is just abusing you or feels it's the right thing to do because that's what they've seen from international level, that's going to knock someone away from sport, and the loss of opportunity for that person from a physical, mental, social aspect growing as a human being is massive. And I couldn't agree more.
Sport's so key for all of that. Like, it's so key for everything. It's why we all love doing it, no matter what it is. So totally agree with you. So
Ben, I realise we're coming towards the end of our time. I've loved this conversation. It's flowed beautifully. There's so many golden nuggets for people to take out of this, and you're hearing your perspective. I'm really glad I got you on the show. One thing that I always ask people to try and give is a couple of things. Is there anything you're listening, watching, reading at the moment that's inspiring you at the moment?
I think, like a lot of it, we have our mental skills here in New Zealand, and what he does is he gives us a podcast, just snippets every few weeks, and a lot of it is just the theme that we've been learning about over the last few weeks, just been about grasping opportunities. We talked about it before, so you can always see something in the light that you paint it. So if you see it in a negative light, that's how you see it. But you see it as a positive thing, and that opportunity may be something you've watched that you can take into a game, and maybe something you learned from a game, and it may be how you want to be with your family. That see everything as an opportunity to be able to be better and grow. And I think that's sort of the theme that we've been looking at over the last few weeks. And I've loved it. And what it's meant is that I sort of go into games now seeing as every game is opportunity. And I sort of bounce out on the field now. I'm like, cool, okay, let's go. Let's try and, let's work hard. Let's enjoy this game. Let's see as an opportunity to get better. And let's see what happens in 80 minutes. So that's a big one for me at the moment.
Love it. And if you were to set a challenge for a listener today based on our conversation, is there something that you would set specifically as a challenge?
Yeah, I would. I think I'll probably do it more like match official based, but I reckon my challenge would be if you're a match official out there and you love the game, you want to be part of it for longer, no matter what level you're at, find someone out there that you trust who can come and watch you, can watch a video if you're getting your game filmed, and actually can give you some advice on what they're seeing. And they don't need to be an expert in rugby or an expert in the sport that you're doing, but just having an external opinion I think really helps, because it challenges your thought processes, allows you to think about other things, and I think it's just a way of opening yourself up to listening to other people. And I always thought that was really key. So no one ever is born as an expert of being a match official. What you do is you grow over time through your own experiences and through the experiences of other people as well. So that would be my challenge, to go and find someone.
Yeah, there was a moment in The Whistleblowers where one of your colleagues, I think it was the Australian fellow, who had the guy that had brought him up and sadly had passed away. Yeah. And it was it's like a mentor, right? It's someone
exactly.
That. Ben, thank you so much for your time, mate. Where's the best place to send people to follow more of what you're doing?
Look, a lot of my stuff is just on Instagram, so you can just follow me. It's o'keefe.ben. What I'm trying to do is, put out laws, educate people around the game. I feel a responsibility to be able to do that. And if I can, get people enjoying the game a little bit more by understanding it, then I've done my job.
Mate, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure, mate. Great to chat.